Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the OT for Life podcast. First off, I wanted to thank you for taking the time to listen today, and I also wanted to let you know that I really appreciate you and your support of my show. Today, I'm bringing on Sarah Lyon, an occupational therapist and fellow entrepreneur. You guys might recognize her from her blog OT Potential, the OT Potential podcast, her online journal club, and the OT Entrepreneur Facebook group. Sarah has a passion for research and helping therapists have access to and integrate evidence into their clinical practice. In today's episode, we dive into the evidence as she shares resources to access journal articles, how to find valid and appropriate research, and also how to use evidence to inform and promote best practices within occupational therapy. So let's bring on Sarah and hear how evidence-based practice holds the key to unlocking the potential of occupational therapy. If you're interested in occupational therapy, this is the place for you. This show aims to explore our profession by sharing who we are and what we do. Because for us, occupational therapy is more than just a job. Hi, I'm Sarah. Welcome to OT for Life. So welcome to the show, Sarah. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Sarah. Honored to be on the OT for Life podcast.
I'm so excited to have you today. And I think the topics that we're going to get into are just going to be amazing. I'm so excited. But I wanted to start out because you let me in on a little secret about you. And I hear that you are a little bit of an OT history buff.
Oh, yes.
And that you have to limit how much money you spend on OT history memorabilia. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, I'm usually not like a shopper. Like, I'm kind of thrifty, but I love buying OT history stuff. Like, I love getting on Etsy, and you can find like OT badges that the OTs wore during World War II. So I have those. I like to find like old copies of original OT texts. And yeah, I just have to tell myself like every 6 months I can buy one OT related thing, basically.
So it's a time and a money thing.
Yes. And it's like a rabbit trail I can go down to be like, this is for my business, but it's like not really helping anyone. It's just like for myself, basically.
Just like a side passion.
Yes.
So what would you say are some of your most like prized possessions that you have?
Okay, so I'm from Nebraska, and I recently found this book. Oh, I wish I had, it's in the other room, but it's about one of the first OTs who is also from Nebraska and about her story. She like moved to the coast and became acquainted with occupational therapy and traveled. And I was just like influential in the early years of that. So, it's called The Healing Heart, the story of Aura Ruggles, pioneer in occupational therapy. And right. The book has like lots of great quotes in it. So that's one of my favorites for sure.
That is so cool. Okay. You totally make me want to go read it now too. And maybe you could send me like a link or a picture or something and we can include that in the show notes. That would be really cool.
Oh, I'd be honored to include my OT memorabilia.
Yeah. Is there anything that has caught your eye that you've been like staring at for months that you want to buy? You just haven't done it yet?
Yeah, there's just a lot of the founders also wrote about OT, and there's like original copies of their books available online. I can't think of any of the titles off the top of my head, but I definitely have like an Amazon wish list that is just like old, expensive books that I will send out for like my birthday and for Christmas to family members, and no one ever buys me one of those books.
You're gonna have to make it where that's like the only thing that they could buy for you, and it's like, this is what I want.
Yes.
So like where do you even find, I mean I know you said Amazon, but where do you come across what these things are, being somebody that I wouldn't even know what to look for or where to look for any of this stuff.
Yeah. So I got into it when OT turned 100. I wanted to write some blog posts about OT history. And I feel like I started originally with journal articles. There were some nice series that were written in like the 80s about OT history. And I would find these books referenced in these journal articles.
Okay. And how accessible would you say that these old texts are? And some of the other stuff too. Like, I would think off the top of my head, like, they might be kind of hard to track down.
Yeah, actually, I would say probably 75% are free and available to the public, like Google Books. And so you can just like read that online version of them.
Uh-huh. Okay, so you totally, now I have another question. Are you one of those people that reading like an online text is okay? Or do you want the actual?
No, I want the book. I want the book.
Okay, that's what I thought. But I was like, hold on, maybe yes. You're okay with just reading it if you can just get your hands on anything.
Yeah.
So when you can, you are actually tracking down the physical hard copies of the books.
Yes. Yep.
How many books do you have now?
Oh, not as many as I want, like 5.
Oh, okay. Okay. So your husband's not mad that like the books are like taking over.
Yes. Yes.
That's really cool. And I feel like that just kind of segues so nicely into our topic that I wanted to talk to you about today. You are really big into research and using evidence within practice and sharing evidence, I should say. So I know when you started kind of looking into some of the history stuff, when AOTA became 100, that's when you kind of started looking at all these like historical documents. But where did your interest for research and evidence come from?
So I would say that my interest started back in school, and it wasn't really because we were looking at a lot of evidence. It was mostly feeling like there was a lack of actual evidence that we were looking at in our program. So this was in 2010. So the field's already like changed a lot since then. But I think I was reading in textbooks and really curious to read more primary documents. And then in the clinic would try to do my own research, but always found it just hard to know, like, we'll find an article and you're like, is this legit? What's like actually actionable that I can take away from this? So I always found the process really frustrating as a clinician.
And even like way back in school, that's, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I feel like we kind of, so I graduated in 09, so we were kind of around the same era.
Yeah.
And I feel like, yeah, I feel like the research part was, it was always a struggle. And
yeah.
I feel like at least students now have a little bit more access, but I know you kind of mentioned that there have been some changes within the professions. What types of changes have you seen in terms of either accessibility of evidence or maybe an increase of evidence?
So yeah, I would definitely say both. There's both more access and there's more evidence across the entire healthcare field. We are just experiencing like exponential growth in the amount of research that is available to us. Like 50 years ago, it would take your whole entire career for the amount of medical evidence to double over that. When you were in school to when you were done, there would be like a doubling of evidence over that time.
Oh, wow.
But for us, the amount of evidence doubles every couple of years. So by the time you start school to the time you finish school, the amount of evidence about occupational therapy has doubled. So there's just so much more coming out. And I see that. I mean, I really think that that is the challenge of our generation for OTs, to be like, how do we keep up with all of these changes? And historically, it's taken so long for new research to get into practice, not just in OT, but across the medical field. And I just don't think our consumers will put up with that, because that's the other thing that's changed, is this research is also accessible to patients. And so a very involved patient might be looking at best practices online now.
Yeah, I think that's a great point that you just brought up. It's like, it's not only just us as clinicians reading the research, but because of technology and because of the ease of accessibility, somebody, you could have a client or a patient come to you and be like, hey, I was just reading about XYZ treatment or this protocol. And they're like, okay, let's try it. And you're like, wait, hold on.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm not a pediatric therapist, but I think of you guys, especially as with parents who are actively reading about their kids' treatment, that they come in with more knowledge than obviously in the hospital. Our patients aren't actively researching in the same way. So
yeah, it's I do remember the first couple times that I would mention like a term or a treatment strategy or something to a client, like, for instance, say like sensory integration or sensory processing. And they would look at me and be like, oh, yeah, I was reading about that online the other day. And I'm like, oh, whoa.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So tell me what you learned. And then like try to fill in the gaps of like what they had taken away from it. But I do remember that happening and just kind of taking a step back and being like, all right, like the parents and the clients, they're going and they're doing their own research on this stuff.
Yeah. And this like really this passion solidified for me like as a consumer. I think it was like 2 years ago, I started getting spells of dizziness. Like every single day, I would wake up in the morning and feel dizzy. And I could not figure out what it was. I saw lots of specialists. And we like finally narrowed in on a diagnosis, which is POTS, postural orthostatic tachycardia with vestibular migraines. And so my clinicians helped me come up with the diagnosis, but they didn't have a ton of help for me on what I could do with it. But I actually researched it myself and I found like a recent protocol that had been published that was focused on exercise and diet. And I followed the protocol from this journal article and found relief really quickly. And if I hadn't found that article, I don't know how long it would have taken me to get those symptoms managed. So yeah, it's just amazing. There is a lot of research out there. And as clinicians, it's super hard. Or just thinking my doctors, like I don't expect them to know that research off the top of their head, because that's obviously impossible to keep up with everything. So yeah, so that just presents with a problem. Like, how do we as therapists keep up with research in the best ways that we can, or at least be able to research it when we have a condition that we're not as familiar with treating?
Yeah. So, I mean, you have the clinical lens of being an occupational therapist and having worked within the clinical realm, but then also you have this kind of personal tie to utilizing evidence and basically studying evidence to find solutions or find protocols or find some deeper understanding to some issues that may or may not be well documented. So that's that's fascinating that you have kind of both the clinical and slash personal tie to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You sparked so many questions. So I'm like, which one do you want to ask first? Okay. So I know there are a lot of therapists out there that utilize evidence and tend to be very evidence-based, but I also know that some of us might struggle in really kind of knowing what the different types of evidence is out there and kind of these different considerations for utilizing evidence-based practice. And so maybe if you could just kind of give us a rundown on what are some of the different types of research that is out there and what are things to kind of keep in mind when you are looking at a research article?
Yeah, I think I want to start really big picture and be like, I know that for some therapists, they don't like the word evidence-based practice, or they have treatments that they deliver that they're confident in and bring their treatments back to occupation always, which is always a great route to take. And that's like their main decision maker. Is, yeah, their experience in bringing it back to occupation, which are both great things. When I think of evidence-based practice, I think of it as a tool that we're using more so than like the end-all be-all. We're trying to find as much information as we can about what's worked according to studies. But at the end of the day, you have a unique individual in front of you and you're a unique individual as a practitioner. So you're just trying to like synthesize as much as you can. So I definitely think of it as just like a tool in the toolbox.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. But I have another question because
yeah,
like when you first started, you said
I'm trying to be sensitive to like,
oh yeah,
I know people don't like evidence. Like,
well, yeah. Well, and that's what I wanted to ask about, because you said I know some people don't like evidence. Do you feel like it's that they don't like it, or that maybe there's a unfamiliarity or some sort of like hesitancy because they are just not as familiar with it?
Yeah, I definitely want to qualify what I said there, because I feel like instead of saying don't like, I want to say maybe haven't found it helpful in the past or haven't found it actionable. And research is definitely not perfect. It's really hard to take what's happening in these studies and translate it to your clinic. So I definitely understand that people have hesitancy about that. And I think that they rightly should.
Yeah. And I think because you said the word using your clinical lens, but then also applying it to like the uniqueness of the client situation. And I feel like that is probably the hardest part of looking into the research when you have like one patient in mind and they have such a specific diagnosis or presentation, and you're scanning the research and nothing quite fits that one.
Yeah.
that one client.
Or they have one thing plus 10 other things.
Yeah. Like. Yeah, that exactly. And so it's hard to like translate it. And so, I mean, I asked that question because I'm kind of been one of those people that I want to be more evidence-based, but I've always had a hard time making it applicable kind of across the board within my clinical role. And I feel like there's got to be other people that are similar to me out there that have this difficulty in, well, first accessing the research, but then also applying it to their practice.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Or, and I think especially people like you and I, where we were in school 10 years ago, and the research that has come out in this past 10 years is so much better than what was out there before already. So yeah, we're like thinking of it as it was in 2010 versus where we're at in 2019. And there is a lot more out there. And I do want to say too, I don't know if other therapists experience this, but especially in my first years as an OT, like at the end of the day, I always had this worry, guilt maybe, about whether I was really helping my patients and providing the best care. And I think that feeling was definitely a factor that has kind of pushed me down this direction. Especially being a therapist, I was working in small town Nebraska at the time, and I just always felt really frustrated because I was like, I know that there's a lot of OTs out there who are doing similar work to me, who probably know a lot more than I do. And it's really hard for me to connect with them. So that was part of why I started a website long ago and what I really wanted my focus to be on. Yeah, and that's like shifted over the years what that's looked like. But yeah, that was the core of what drove me to create OT Potential.
Yeah, I want to jump back to what you were saying about having that feeling of, are you really helping? Are you really doing the best that you possibly can for the clients? And I feel like a lot of us go through that, and maybe even a lot of us are going through that, where it's like, okay, we know clinically what's been working based on our experience or based on maybe some of the trainings that we've been doing. But I feel like when you have that added layer of evidence and research to kind of back up what it is that you are explaining to a client, there is just like a different understanding to it where it's like, okay, clinically it's been shown to work and here's the research to back it up. And I found like, especially when I'm trying to talk to clients, when I say based on the research, like based on what I have been looking into, what I have been kind of studying, this is what I am seeing, and this is how it applies to your child's situation or your family's situation or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And all of a sudden the parents are like, oh, really? Oh, okay. Rather than like, oh, just based on my opinion or based on my experience.
Yes.
Type thing.
Yeah. And I just feel like this is a time too where lots of therapists can feel really confident in what they're doing, whether or not they're actively looking at the research. But because of our focus on function and occupation, like as I'm going through these research articles, that is just the theme that I'm seeing again and again, that that is what works. So we just went through a systematic review of best practices for upper extremity motor function rehab after a stroke. And this long article just basically wrapped up by saying the more real world practice you can give patients of different like functional activities, the better, which I just think as OTs, we should look at that and feel really confident because that's what we've been doing. Like that's what I was taught in school 10 years ago, even though this research wasn't out. I feel like a lot of research is confirming our focus on function and on occupation.
So I know that you just mentioned that you had started a kind of research club, the OT Potential Club. And so maybe you could just discuss a little bit about what you have started over there and how this kind of ties into what we've just been talking about.
So I just started this online journal club where we do a weekly article review. And for me, the big prep for this club was figuring out a system how to find research that was really influential for our field. Like I said before, there's so much research coming out. And to me, that's one of the big challenges is being like, is this article legit? Is it important? What am I even looking at if I'm lucky enough to find an article that's related to a client that I'm seeing? And one thing I really wanted to do was broaden my search beyond occupational therapy journals. One of my other big passions is just interdisciplinary practice. So part of my own curiosity was, what are other disciplines and other journals saying about occupational therapy? Are they even researching them? So that was something that I wanted to figure out as I went into this project. I got together with a research librarian, and she helped me come up with this system where we found the journal articles that had been the most cited by other articles. Like citations is a metric for measuring impact. So if I put out a journal article and 30 others cite it, that means that that article that I put out was influential. So she helped me find journal articles that mentioned occupational therapy and had been cited a lot. So what that did was help me find articles that were from really influential journals, that most of them are actually outside of occupational therapy journals, and to find the really important studies. So if you think about the research pyramid hierarchy that we learned in school, which I only would have vaguely remembered, but I've been looking at it a lot more lately. But at the very top is like systematic reviews, which is when people look at like all the research that has been done or all the good research that's been done on certain topics and kind of summarizes that for you. Those get cited a lot because they're so influential. And then right under that is randomized controlled trials. And that's a lot of the other research that we're looking at because that's the most rigorous form of research study that someone can do. Using this system has just like helped me pull the most influential OT-related articles.
Well, and I like too that you were saying that you're not just using research from OT journals, like not to discount what they're doing or anything like that. But I think really just kind of looking at that global picture and looking at the like the interprofessional, that collaboration, it's not just being within our own profession. It's seeing what else is out there and seeing what is being promoted in the literature about our profession. And I think that is like so important to not just see like what we're saying, because we know what's working.
Yes.
We know our profession, but to also see what other professions, what other professional literature is incorporating about our profession too.
Yeah, I really think that moving into the future, more so than ever, that OTs need to think of themselves as part of a team and to be reading what, for example, your like pediatrician might be reading about occupational therapy is really vital to be doing. And we're just at a special point in history because probably 20 years ago, the only research you got to see was the research coming from the journal that you were subscribed to, or I guess you went to the library. But more and more research is becoming available online. So it is really a lot more easy for us to see what's being published in other journals.
Yeah. So as you're looking at some of the research, I know you were talking about that you really look into how many times that it has been cited and seeing the influence and the scale that it has. What are other kind of tips that you either do for yourself or that you would tell somebody in how they can find really good research and kind of weed out some of the stuff that might not be as, I don't know, maybe as important or as influential?
I would say that looking at the impact factor of the journal is a really good place to start. For this, again, is a term that I would have vaguely remembered, but not fully remembered. An impact factor is a number that journals are given based on the number of times an average article from that journal was cited in the previous 2 years. So, for example, impact factor of 10 means that an average article in that journal would have been cited 10 times in the past 10 years. And I think the highest ones, which would be like the Lancet journals, I think theirs is like, I want to say 50 to 70, whereas AJOTS, the American Journal of Occupational Therapy, is around 3. So that's a pretty big difference there in how widely the research is being cited. And after like doing these reviews too, I think part of it is practice. Yeah, I don't know if there's any way to really get around. I think it's good to just like pick up an article and read it every now and then. And even if you did 5 or 10 per year, I think you could almost get a sense of, is this a solid study or is it not? For example, like I've looked at studies that have typos in them. So that's, I mean, just because it is published in a journal, like you can still use your like basic scanning skills and tell how legitimate it is, like by like, yeah, grammar and like really simple indicators like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So this might be kind of a silly question, but when you are talking about impact factors, for somebody that may not know where to find that, is that something that's like easily accessible when you're looking at an article?
Yeah, you can. I usually just like Google impact factor of AJOT.
Okay.
And their impact factor from like the past 3 years should come up.
Okay.
If you Google a journal and impact factor doesn't come up, I would say that's probably an indicator that you're looking at a really, really small journal, because I've definitely had that happen too. For example, I think there's a, I was just looking at occupational therapy in schools based out of England. I can't remember the full journal title, but that's a very small journal because it's so specific, the content that they're carrying.
Uh-huh. Which, I mean, might not necessarily be bad per se, because it might be new or it might be very, very niche, but it is kind of an interesting guiding factor to see maybe more like the scope of what those journals are putting out there in helping you kind of guide what it is that you're looking for and how you're actually going to be able to use that information.
Yes. Yeah.
So we were kind of talking about weeding through actual journals and weeding through the research part of it. But do you have any advice for somebody who wants to start integrating more evidence into their practice and into their clinical work?
That's a question that I'm really curious to help answer, because I honestly know it can be really hard and there can be a lot stacked against therapists, one of them just being time. I mean, I mentioned reading journal articles, but I'm also like, I know that that is really hard for therapists, and the majority of us don't have time to do that during our average workday. So I hate thinking about asking people to do that on their own time. So that's a barrier. And lots of treatment changes might also include like changes to your like actual setting, like you might need to buy a new manual or something like that. So I know that that's also a barrier. So all that to say, I know that there's a lot of barriers.
I'm glad that you just started with talking about the barriers to using evidence within our clinical practice, because I feel like for those of us that are either not using evidence or maybe not using the amount of evidence in our practice that we would like to, it is because we have these barriers, such as like time, like you mentioned, or maybe productivity demands where we just don't have the capability to be able to implement it within our working hours. And then I was also thinking, like, if you cover like a wide range of diagnoses and maybe ages and populations, it would take a long time to figure out research for every individual population that you're working with.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I do feel like that there are a lot of barriers that impact how we can implement research into our clinical practice. And the other one just being accessibility, because I think, and I'm totally throwing myself into this category, like sometimes we just don't even know where to find the research.
Yeah, it's an interesting moment in time because a lot more research is available to us, but it's not super easy still to find exactly what you're looking for. Just like if you type in like stroke and OT into Google Scholar, it's still hard to pull out what the best articles are there. And then those articles aren't summarized in a way to be actionable for therapists. So that would also be just like another huge barrier is how the information is organized currently. There's so much of it. And to me, it feels really scattered and that you have to dig a lot.
Well, and also, like, do you find that, are you having to like sign up for a lot of different either journals or different kind of access points? Because I know there's a lot of free research out there, but then there is a lot that you either have to pay for or you have to be a member of a site in order to access. And so even just that, if you're looking for a research article and you find the one you want, but then you have to log in and create an account, it just adds more steps and more hurdles that we as therapists have to jump through. And again, going back to the time, it just like, it's just that huge barrier.
Yeah. Yeah. And that last one, like you said, the like having to sign in and pay money for journal articles, that's something I've been like really surprised by actually in my list of the 50 most influential articles. I think of the first 10 we've done so far, 8 of them have been free and just available online. So that really subverted my expectations of the hoops I would have to jump through to get to these articles. And then the thing I always tell or remind OTs of in the US is if you have an NBC OT membership, you have access to ProQuest for free, which is a sizable database. And so at least one article that I've reviewed isn't available for free, but it is actually in ProQuest for you. And I think that that's the most valuable part of the NBC OT membership. So I'm always reminding therapists that they do have that access.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing that up, because I think oftentimes it's easy to kind of overlook some of the benefits that you get for being affiliated with your national association or your state association or even like internationals, you know, like the World Federation of Occupational Therapists. There's so many resources out there. And just by being a member, it grants you access to certain realms that you can get into. And I knew that in my head, but then as soon as you said it, I'm like, oh yeah, see, like I totally forgot about that.
Yes. Yeah. So I guess circling back to your question about what's the easiest way to get started, I think that I would recommend thinking of the most common diagnoses that you work with. And hopefully that's a diagnosis that's common for other people. I'm thinking like stroke or autism or MS or Parkinson's. And so just picking one and maybe starting with some research on that. So setting like the goal for yourself of, I just want to brush up on what best practices are for this one population that I'm working with.
I like that advice. I think that's really good advice, because I think a lot of times we can just kind of get bogged down with everything and trying to look at the big picture and trying to encompass everything.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, just picking one and starting there and kind of going through and learning the process of, okay, maybe I'll try ProQuest. I'll look there, see if I can find it there, and maybe start with some of like the OT journals, just because that might be a place that is easier to access based on membership or anything like that. And then as you get comfortable with this, then you can start to look at like either other access points or other journals or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No, as I'm doing article reviews too, I'm always like, I don't want to make this more stressful for therapists. Like, I definitely appreciate how much therapists have going on, and I don't want to be adding more to their plate. So definitely for me and looking at research, I think most of it just affirms what we're already doing, which is really great. And then maybe there's little tweaks that you can make to your treatment sessions. A lot of what you're finding probably isn't going to be a complete overhaul of what you're doing.
Yeah. If you luck out and find a research article that talks about everything that we do, ooh, let us know.
Yes.
But yeah, I knew that this was kind of a trick question because I know what you have created with the OT Potential Club is an easier way for therapists and students to access research. But that's why I was like, I'm going to ask her and see if she has any tips outside of this. Because I think what you are doing with the OT Potential Club is brilliant and so needed within our profession. And so, yeah, maybe just kind of like walk us through, because I know you will do one article a week, and kind of walk us through the process of what that looks like.
Yeah, it's been such a fun project to work on. And for me, it's been kind of a dream project for years. I've wanted to find ways to help therapists provide the best care possible, and also ways to connect with other therapists who are doing similar work. So the club has just been, a dream project for me. So what we do in the club, like I said, I came up with the 50 most influential OT articles, and each week we're just going through and reviewing each one. And what I do is I do a written review that's pretty short. It's probably less than 500 words, but it's specifically geared towards occupational therapists. So it's different than just the abstract. I really highlight how occupational therapy is used in the journal article, what assessments the therapist might be using. I think that's a great way to incorporate best practices into your treatment sessions, is might just be trying a new assessment that you haven't done before. I give tips for how you might incorporate what you learned in this article into your documentation, and then usually just some takeaways that I had from the article, or if during in the discussion portion of the article, if they had any great takeaways that were geared towards therapists, I'll highlight those as well. And since it's an online forum too, I'm also able to like link directly to that article. So you can go and read the article yourself if you want to read the full article, or you can just go read snippets of it. And I usually link to the assessments that they use, so you can look at those. And then my favorite part is we have a forum where therapists can chime in and either ask questions or just be like, when I'm working with this population, this is what's worked for me. So that's been, to me, the most fun part, is being able to discuss those things. So, but ultimately, my goal is to have a database of these influential articles, where if you have someone coming in with a diagnosis you haven't worked with in a while, that you can brush up really quickly on what the research is saying about that.
And what I love about what you're saying right now is basically all of these like hurdles and barriers and everything that we've been talking about, you're doing all this legwork. You're taking time. You are investigating all of the impact factors of the journals, of the influence that these articles are having. Like, you're taking out all of that hard part and then applying it directly to the field of occupational therapy. And again, like when you were kind of mentioning before, that you are not just taking research from OT journals. And so a lot of times, like, I think it was it the last article, I think, that you were talking about, that they kept mentioning physical therapy, but they were actually incorporating occupational therapy and physical therapy within that, like within the same realm. And
that article drove me crazy because it was so confusing to whether they were talking about actual physical therapy or rehab, both OT and PT combined. So yes.
Yeah. Right. So alongside like the typos and everything that you come across, like sometimes OT, they might be talking about occupational therapy, but they're using a different word, or they're throwing it under like a umbrella term of physical rehabilitation or something like that. And so I think it's so cool what you're up to, and really making it very, like, very easy to access, and then also very digestible for people to be able to do that, but then also to provide that opportunity to kind of engage with the community and everybody else to kind of share what they thought was interesting, if they've been utilizing it or if they found other research that also kind of ties into what that article was talking about.
Yeah, it's been just a super fun project. And I feel like I've grown so much as a therapist doing it. And it's been really fun to be able to do it alongside fellow OTs. And I do want to say, I definitely think of it, of the club, as just like another tool in the toolbox. I don't think it's like the end all be all solution to this big research problem that we're talking about. CEUs still have their place, and whatever other services that you might be using. Definitely have their place still, but I hope it's just another tool that therapists can utilize to ultimately gain confidence in delivering evidence-based practice.
Definitely. And I feel like within a lot of my episodes that I've recorded so far, the confidence piece has come up a lot. And yeah. I was actually just talking with some students yesterday, and like they graduate on Wednesday, and we were talking about confidence. Like, it just kept coming back up into this conversation. And I love the fact of using research to guide your clinical judgment, but also in the same vein, help with that confidence piece. Because I think a lot of people are like, how do I get more confident if I don't know what I'm doing? Go do the research, or, you know, go read the research, or do the research if you want to do it yourself.
Yeah.
But utilizing that to help you, even if you maybe don't have the experience within the field, or if you switch practice areas or like something like that where you might not have the experience for it.
Yeah. And like I said before, it's a really special time for OTs because the focus that we've had on function and occupation is what the research is showing helps. So I do think it's a great place to gain confidence. I saw a Facebook thread yesterday that was, the OT was really discouraged because she felt like the PTs had all these protocols they were following and knew anatomy so much better. And she felt like her approaches were just inadequate. And I was looking at that right after reading this journal article on stroke rehab. And what the research is really showing us is that patients really need that real world practice that we're giving them as OTs. And just by doing exercises and really like task specific things, which I kind of associate with PT, that those don't translate to better function. Like, you have to, the article kept saying, you gain what you train. Like, if you train function, then that's what you gain in. If you just train in specific exercises, that's all you gain, and it doesn't translate well. So I do think it's just, and not to throw PT under the bus, I didn't mean that in that, but
I know what you meant.
Okay. But I think that it is a unique and wonderful time where looking at research doesn't have to be like scary or to be like, oh, am I going to find out that I'm doing everything wrong? I think you're going to find out that you're doing the right thing a lot of times, and that there's like little things you can tweak and maybe some new ideas you can get. So hopefully it's not as intimidating as what people might be thinking of it.
Yeah, I think what you just said right there of like people being afraid that it might be showing them, or that the research might be saying, oh, what you're doing is wrong. But like, I don't think that's necessarily the case. Like, I think it's more along the lines that it is backing up what we were doing. It's backing up our interventions. It's backing up our clinical judgment, our clinical processing of the whole kind of case that we're looking at. And I think the other thing too, like, we've been talking about kind of therapists at the individual level, but then also looking at our profession as a whole. And I know one of kind of the topics that's been coming up a lot is occupational therapists having a seat at the table and being able to advocate for our profession and show what we do and how valuable it is. And by having that research to be backing up our treatment methodologies, be backing up the occupational science part of our profession, I think is just going to be immensely helpful across the board.
Absolutely. Yeah, I feel so passionate about this topic because I really do believe that occupational therapists have such an important role to play at that table. I think as we move to the future, things are just going to be becoming more and more interdisciplinary. And I think as OTs, where we're used to looking at things, we're used to looking at our patient holistically. And so we can, I think we're uniquely poised to be looking at healthcare systems holistically too. So I not only want OTs to have a seat at the table, I want them to be leaders at that table. And I just think that'd be a pretty wonderful healthcare system. I think more OTs are needed in that role, and I'm excited to see more OTs transitioning to leadership there.
100% agree with you. And I have a feeling when people are listening to what you just said there, like everyone's going to be like nodding their head and like, yeah, yeah, yes, definitely. Yeah. Like, it's not just having a seat at the table. It is being a leader at that table. Oh, I love it. Like that is.
Yes.
Yes. I love it. Ah, I'm so inspired. I know we were talking a little bit about the club, but I know that you also started a podcast that revolves around this as well. So maybe take a minute and share a little bit about the podcast and how that ties into the OT Potential Club.
Yeah, I really wanted to give an article review for everyone, even if they weren't a member of the club. It's just $25 a year to sign up for the actual club where you have access to the forum and everything. But I also wanted to have a way to share the article review that was free and available. And I actually started my first one. I did a video of me summarizing the journal article, and I shared it in one of my groups and instantly got all this feedback where people were like, I want this in podcast form. I want this in podcast form. So I was actually kind of relieved because I'm like, oh, that's way easier than doing a video each week.
Well, you totally answered my question because I was going to say, why a podcast?
Yes. So yeah, I had never, now I like definitely see that that makes sense. But on my own, I for some reason wouldn't have thought of a podcast. And my podcasts are really short. They're 10 to 15 minutes. And I just give a high level overview of the research that I looked at that week.
I love your podcast. And I think it's great. Like they're super short. It's really concise. It's just really good information talking about each article, but then also kind of the like your actionable tips for OTs. But I think this also just kind of ties into the importance of how people consume material. And so for me, I came across you. I mean, I had known who you were because of your blog and everything, but I came across the OT Potential Club because of your podcast first, because I listen to podcasts and that's how I consume my material. And so I think by having it in different avenues like text form, but then also the podcast, it's just, again, it kind of opens up those barriers of how people get that information. And so, yeah, it's like, it's amazing because I started with the podcast and then like stumbled into the group, but I'm sure some people found the group first and then the pod, you know, like it just kind of goes.
Yes. As we, of course, know as OTs, like there are just different kinds of learners. And as I've had a blog since 2011 or 12. And that's just something I've learned again and again is people like information delivered in different ways. And yeah, like to be able to kind of pick or choose whether they want the long version or the short version. So that's why when I was thinking about the OT Potential Club, I definitely wanted different avenues for people to be able to access it.
Yeah. And since you just kind of brought up your blog a little bit, I know that there is a lot of information out there on your blog since it's been going for 7-8 years now.
Yeah.
And like some of the things that when I was just like looking at it the other day, you had different interviews with people from different practice areas. And I thought that was really fascinating. You had a whole section about what is occupational therapy and then the difference between like OT and PT and speech and lots of different forms and other resources for occupational therapists. Like there's so much great information that you have on your blog. I mean, I don't even know how you do it all.
Well, I never do a lot at once. I think for me, it's just been consistently making stuff for 8 years, like you said. And a lot of it has just been, I mean, it started just with me as a therapist being like, I really want to be able to find this information online. So I'll start out by creating it. And over the years, I've been like, oh, I really want OTs to know what certifications are available to them. But I'm frustrated because that information is scattered everywhere. So I'll create a blog post that like lists all the certifications that are available and what it takes to get each one. It's just kind of, I guess, organically evolved according to both what I'm interested in and what people are asking me for.
Mm-hmm. What's the saying? Oh, I'm like going to butcher it, but what is it? Inspiration is the
necessity is the mother of invention. Yes. Okay.
I'm like, I know what I'm trying to say and I like can't even remember what it is. Yeah. Like that's exactly
I only know that because I'm obsessed with the Little Women version with Winona Ryder and Susan Sarandon. And that's and they say that in that movie. So that's the only reason it came to the top of my head.
I've heard it so many times and now I'm like, I can't remember what it is. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like that is it right there, because you were working and we'll go back. You were in school and you found kind of all of these hurdles with research, and then you started working and found all of these, again, hurdles to resources and all that type of stuff. So it's interesting that out of like your personal necessity came all of these ideas to help others.
Yeah, it's been a really fun journey and to be able to connect with, I've been able to connect with so many OTs over the past years to help me create the content, especially where I don't have an expertise in, like, for example, pediatrics, to find a pediatric OT to pair with to create content mm-hmm. for has been really fun. As you know, because you're podcasting. So
yeah, the connection piece is so pivotal. And it's one of the best parts, because I think a lot of times we as OTs, we like almost put ourselves down when we feel like we don't know everything, but there's no way that we could actually know everything.
Yes.
And so being able to connect with people that have expertise in other areas and have passions in other areas, like, oh, it's been so amazing for me and just like inspirational. Like,
yeah.
In talking with you, I'm sitting here like, I need to get a little bit more up to date on my research. I need to make more of an effort to do this. And it's been something that I've been wanting to do. I just really, you know, life gets in the way and you get busy and you get mm-hmm. kind of stuck in your routine. And so, yeah, like that connecting with other people, it just continues to inspire me, and I'm sure it's inspiring other people to be like, oh, you're like, that's an idea and I'm so passionate about that. Oh, this person's interested in it too. Oh my gosh, like I'm gonna reach out to them and connect with them.
In OT, I just cannot emphasize this enough, and I get to experience all the time being a blogger, but OTs are such a unique group because by and large, they are just so helpful and so supportive of one another. And so we're so lucky to be in a profession where if you have an idea or a thought, and if you want to connect with another OT that might be able to help you, chances are you'll hear back from them. And yeah, they'll do everything that they can to help. And not all professions are like that. So yeah, we're just really lucky to have such a supportive profession.
Completely. And I feel like I'm always talking about the importance of going to OT conferences and conferences in general, but then also just like social media and reaching out to people. And it's so easy to find other people that have the same interests that you do.
Mm-hmm.
And it, like, I know for me personally, like it has added so much overall joy, overall understanding of who I am as a therapist, and also just getting that support, but then also challenging myself to be better and challenging myself to do more and incorporate more into what I am doing. It's like, it's so amazing.
Yes. Yeah. And as OTs, we are tackling really complex problems, and 99.9% of the time, complex problems really need a team to look at them. Mm-hmm. And that might be your actual team at your facility, or it might be like pulling from your network. And whether that's a clinical question or business related question, I think that's just the nature of our work, is it's complex and we need to rely on our networks and our teams and our profession to help us solve problems that we're experiencing.
Definitely. Do you have one moment that really kind of stands out to you from being an occupational therapist, of like maybe your most memorable moment?
Yeah, I mean, my core, even though I've transitioned to, I work on my website full time now. I gave up my clinical work a year ago. I have small kids at home. And at the time I was dizzy, and it just made sense for me to focus on my website full time. But for me, it all comes back to interacting with the patients and providing the best care that we can to our patients. And I was really lucky to work in a psychiatric hospital a couple of years ago. And just being a part of those groups, I was working with adult men at the time, and the discussions that we had, and I guess the non-linear progress that we made, but still progress over the course of time. To me, that's what it's all about. And so as I'm working on my website, that's what anchors me and drives me, is really just thinking about patient interactions.
I love it. I think that's
fantastic. That's not a very specific moment, but like overarching, like those groups that I led are, exactly, what anchors me.
And again, like even before you said it, I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh my gosh, this totally makes sense. Like this, as you are looking at research articles, you have these men, you have these patients in mind that are guiding you to figure out the best research, the best practices, and basically sifting through all of this knowledge and all of this like literature to figure out the best things for the client. So I totally, even though it's not like one specific moment, I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah.
All right. So I have a couple more questions for you before we wrap up today. And the first question I want to ask you is, if you could only have one word to describe occupational therapy, what would it be?
Ooh, what do other people say?
I can't tell you. You can tell your own.
I'm thinking of phrases, but you asked for one word.
I know. It's one of those things that everyone's like, but I have so much to say. I'm like, that's why it's hard.
Yes.
And well, I've been like legit yelled at before because people are like, I can't give you one word. I'm like, you have to give me one word.
Well, I definitely have my word, and that word is healers. Just because to me, the idea of healing is such a holistic term, and to me really captures like the holistic approach that we take with our patients. And yeah, it's just always a word that I've referenced in my own clinical work, like really wanting my patients to find like complete healing. And sometimes that doesn't necessarily mean that their specific impairment is cured, but hopefully on some level they can find a level of healing from stuff.
Wonderful. I love it. I feel like I say it all the time, but I love asking this question because there are so many good words to describe occupational therapy, and I just love hearing what people come up with and what connects with them. And I think your word is wonderful.
Good.
All right. So if people want to find out more about OT Potential, the blog, or OT Potential Club, more about you, where's your home on the internet?
Yeah, they can come to my website, otpotential.com. And from there, you can find my blog, my podcast. I have an online store with like different forms and ebooks you can download. But my newest venture, and the one I'm most excited about right now, is the OT Potential Club. And you can sign up right on the website. It's $25 a year to join. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I hope that more people join us and participate in our discussions.
Awesome. Well, I can't tell you, Sarah, how inspired I am by our conversation today. Like I said, I need to be better about incorporating evidence into my practice. And I'm really looking forward to being a part of this group and, yeah, just kind of furthering my own clinical reasoning, but then also continuing to engage with the occupational therapy community. So thank you so much for coming on the show today. And thank you for creating so many useful things for therapists. This has been so much fun and really inspirational. So thanks again for coming on the show today.
Absolutely. It's been fun.
Hey, before you go, I just wanted to say thanks for listening to today's episode. If you want to further the discussion, go to our website, otforlife.com, and join our Facebook group. If you like us, here are three easy ways to let us know. One, share our podcast with a friend, colleague, or anyone interested in occupational therapy. Two, leave us a review on iTunes or anywhere this podcast is found. Three, subscribe to us so you don't miss out on any upcoming episodes. Thanks again. We'll catch you next time, OT for Lifers. So welcome, Sarah. How's it going?
Good. I just took a big drink of tea. Oh. Sorry about that. I was like, can we start one more time? Sorry.
I know. I totally just like jumped in. I'm like, I probably should have given you like 2 seconds. Okay. Yes, we can totally do that again.
Probably starting back in school. And I would say in school, it was more just,
Thank you.
Sorry, something just got delivered to our house.
That's okay. Don't worry.
Okay. I don't even know if you could hear that, but I could.
I could. It's fine.
Okay. We just went through a systematic review. Let me start that over. Sorry.
What was the word that you said?
Cited.
Thank you. I was like, impacted. Yeah. No, I know it's called an impact factor, but yeah.
I need to think about what I want to say here.
No, that's okay. I lost you. Are you there?
Oh yeah, I'm here. Yeah.
I was totally just talking to myself.
Yeah. Could you hear my tummy growling at the end?
No, I couldn't. Don't worry.
Maybe when you're editing, you'll hear like distant rumbles.
I'll have to turn it up and try to see if I can hear it. No, I didn't notice it. So that was like perfect timing, like right before you got hungry.